Before we begin this week's episode, I wanted to let you all know that I was lucky enough to appear on another podcast this past week and tell you all that you should go listen to it. The podcast was I'm laughing because this is quite confusing. Who Do You Think You Are? I Am, which is a mini series of the podcast Perfect Taste Forever, which is the Patreon exclusive content, usually for another podcast called SF Ultra. Because this was an episode with a guest, the host uploads those to both the free feed and the Patreon feed, so you do not have to be a Patreon to go listen to myself and Sean talk about The Fifth Wound by Aurora Mattia. You might remember Aurora Mattia appeared on this podcast previously. That was a really fun episode, really good episode. I really, really love The Fifth Wound. I don't know if that came across in that interview how much I like that book, but I really, really like that book. And yeah, definitely go check out SF Ultra is the feed on which you can find the episode that I appeared on, even though that is not the name of the show. It's a little confusing, but it's okay. And just generally also, like, SF Ultra is one of my favorite podcasts that's running currently. It's really great. It's really interesting. In this episode, I actually make a reference to Sean's other podcast, which at the time of recording, I thought was defunct, but in the time between recording and me, that the episode itself and me recording this little thing, it has now come back. So, Live at the Death Factory is also a really great podcast. Yeah, both of those just really, really cool. Would highly recommend you check them out. You can hear me talk a little bit more if you don't get enough of that. But yeah. On to the actual show. It's a really good one this week. Enjoy. Welcome to yet another episode of When a Guy Has a Really Fucked Gender. As always, I'm your host, Jolene, and I'm joined this week by Vanya. Vanya, would you like to say hello to the audience?
Hello, audience.
And Vanya, how would you describe your gender?
Oh boy. I describe my gender as whatever makes me sexiest to whoever is desiring. Yeah, and recently I have been thinking a lot about S&M and like stuff like wound fucking and like the relation that has to Jesus and like various mystics. So when I am a bottom, I am a girl. When I'm a top, I am a boy.
Hell yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about that. What's up with that? What's your sort of relationship to all that sort of stuff? I mean, I've seen I guess pictures
Oh,
of
yeah.
yeah, some pretty gnarly stuff. That you've done. So, I don't know. What's up with what's let's start with what is wound fucking?
Wound fucking is it's a couple of things. For some people, it is literally you have a wound and someone like puts a finger through it, or I guess in the extreme in extreme cases, sometimes people would use their penis or a strap or something. But it can also be like piercing and then using the piercing needle or a you know, sanitize piercing to put it through that hole and kind of do a back and forth, if you will. And it is obviously, like, on the more extreme end of S&M, a lot of people are not fans of blood and blood and piercing play, and cutting that sits on the more heavy end of S&M, along with things like, I guess, like, extremely heavy impact, more extreme forms of torture. Fisting, for some people, is considered extreme. I don't know why it is, but, you know, whatever. And I guess, like, other bodily fluids, like vomit, scat. I'm personally not a fan of scat, but I definitely sit on the more intense end of BDSM and sadomasochism.
Right. Okay. Well, when did you, or how did you come to that?
So, I guess, like, my qualifications, I'm 26 now, and I have known that I was, I don't know, sexually deviant since I was probably, like, 15 or 16. I knew that there was something different, like, more than just being queer or trans, that there was a part of me that desired pain, again, on, like, the more extreme end. And I think it came to me really intensely, and, like, I had, like, an epiphany moment when I was, like, 15 or 16, and I watched Sick, The Life and Death of Supermasochist.
Oh, I fucking love that movie.
yes, it's The Life and Death of Supermasochist, Bob Flanagan. I found it through a Tumblr post that was from a blog that had a bunch of, like, documentaries, and so I watched it, and I was like, oh, okay, so, like, you can actually, like, be like this, and find people who like it too. And that was also around the same time that I realized that I was chronically ill, not really sure what I had, but I knew, you know, I was in a lot of pain all the time. And, you know, even when I was a child, stuff went on, but I have a rare genetic disorder. So people, you know, doctors didn't really know what it was. They didn't recognize it. Anyway, so that kind of, like, set me off down this path of, like, okay, S&M is, like, not necessarily that weird. You know, it doesn't make you a bad person, per se, and it doesn't make you, you know, you will find people who are like you. And it took me a while to, like, fully embrace what I liked and, you know, believe that I would find partners. You know, I'm, like every other trans person in New York, polyamorous, and I have a partner who I've been with for a long time, and they're a bottom, and I am a switch and verse, and so I'm, you know, usually topping in that scenario. I top a lot in general, you know, but I also desire the masochistic end. But yeah, so I was into that for a while. I was dungeon trained when I was 18, 19. I was a full service sex worker for a long time. I was a, you know, dominatrix, as it were, and engaged in a lot of heavier sadomasochism and pain and blood. And as of recently, I've actually, you know, there's been a lot more really, really great scenes that I've been able to have. I am a year sober as of January 12th. And, you know, when I was using, I really wasn't, like, that horny. And I also just was, like, I didn't have good relationships with myself or other people. And I think getting sober has like really opened a lot of doors for me. And as of late, I have had a lot of really great scenes and a lot of really great blood and heavy impact and piercing. And like Jolene said, you know, there's some gnarly stuff that's on like my private Twitter and my private Instagram. I have become kind of like one of the guys who is known for piercing and blood play, which is great. I love that. So yeah, and so I you know, this all ties into, you know, whatever wound fucking may be, whatever it is to each individual person, I guess. And it is fascinating how it ties into this desire, I guess, that we have to be fucked, and like what is fucking, you know, beyond, you know, PIV, you know, beyond the classic heteronormative sort of, oh, you have to have a penis to put in a vagina and that's what fucking is. Like, is that really fucking, you know, sticking your hand down someone's throat, is that fucking? Is piercing somebody and then fucking them, like moving the needle back and forth, is that fucking? To me, that is. I find that fascinating and desirable on both ends.
Oh, I have an amazing story. I can't believe I've never shared this story on here. This was a high key insanity. This like really describes, I feel like this in short really kind of sums up my undergrad experience. My like time during the years between when I was like 18 to 22. I was at it was like the after party to a party. Like it was like we'd been at like a different party, and then like some people I was with were like leaving to just like go back to one of their house, and it was gonna be like, I think there were like six of us or something, and they were like, oh, you know, you like come along, and I was like, okay. And important context is that while I was in undergrad, I was really into stick and pokes and would just like carry around like needles and ink with me and like a sort of like makeshift kit. I was like relatively clean with it. I had like alcohol pads and stuff like that. So I was at this party, or had this like sort of, I guess, a small gathering after a party. Ooh. And I think I like tattooed two people there, but I think it was the second one, or maybe I tattooed them first. I can't remember. I can't even remember what I was tattooing on them, but it was like, I forget where, I think it was like on their foot or like their ankle or something. But they started moaning, and I was like, oh, like, what's up? I was like, what's up?
What's good?
And they were like, oh, I just like forgot to mention, I'm like really into pain. And I was like, so like, should I keep going? And they were just like, don't stop. And I was like, what? Okay. And that's the entirety of it is,
that's really funny. Like,
it was just, I've like told that story to some people, and they're like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, that sounds so uncomfortable. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, it was just really, it's like, I mostly just thought it was funny at the time, but didn't want to laugh at this poor person because they were pretty drunk.
Well, you know.
So that's, I don't know, is that wound fucking? Is sexual tattooing wound fucking?
I guess it can be. It's not as, you know, some people go real deep with like what they can, like in real deep, not psychologically, but like physically, but also psychologically. Go real deep with like, oh, it needs to be an actual wound, or it needs to be like under the skin or whatever. I know
there's,
one person,
there's wound fucking discourse. Like,
there's wound fucking I guess there's wound fucking discourse among like the fairly small community, I guess, that we have. It's not massive. I know one person who, their Instagram got deleted, of course, because, you know, gore. But they had a scene where they literally created a tunnel under their skin, surgically cut it. So there was a tunnel under their skin, and their partner fucked it with their put their fingers in, and fucked it, and then they stitched it back up, and that is the extreme end, and it is very that's fascinating to me. I'm like, wow, no anesthesia, no pain meds, nothing.
Right.
It's kind of crazy because obviously when you're talking about surgery. Surgery, people are put under for that. Some people are even sedated or given Novocaine or lidocaine injections for getting stitches. And you got people who are, heavy masochists out here doing it on their own. I've stitched my own wounds up before. I have, which is an extreme, again, an extreme thing, especially if you're doing it to yourself, because the human body, when it is being hurt, and when you are, it's a similar reason why you can't bite your own finger off, even though you would probably be, physically, you are able to bite a finger. You'd be able to crush a bone in someone's finger if they, put their finger in your mouth and you did not want it there. But there's a reaction in your own body that kind of prevents you from doing that level of damage. And it's similar with why people, you don't typically see people stitch their own wounds, or that's considered an extreme end of masochism or an extreme end of, mind over matter. But for me, and I think it helps that I have brain problems, that there is a level of self-preservation instinct that I just don't have. So I'm able to stitch my own wounds up. I'm able to pierce myself. I put needles through my own labia. And that, is considered an extreme. And I put needles through my own face. And that, is considered an extreme level of masochism. Not to brag or anything. not to brag, but I can put needles through my eyebrow and my lips, and it's fine, whatever. I can give myself piercings. Actually, when I went to get my eyebrow pierced last year, the piercer was like, "Are you okay with needles?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I do play piercing. I've put needles through my own face before." And she's like, "Why didn't you just pierce your eyebrow yourself? Why didn't you put just put a piercing in?" I was like, "I can't get the angle right, you know? So it's easier if it's someone else, getting the angle." And she's like, "That's fair." But she was like, "Yeah, just go do it yourself." I'm probably going to do that myself with my ear or something. I don't feel like going to get my second hole re-pierced on my left ear. Anyway,
I have another fun story, actually.
Yes.
I used to have a Prince Albert back when I had a dick. I had a Prince Albert for a little bit, and I am actually pretty squeamish about pain and needles and stuff. Less so now that I have to give myself injections every week, but I was at this era in my life. And my body piercer, I was pretty good friends with. I wouldn't say that actually. We talked a lot because the shop was on my college campus, and so I was just would see him outside smoking and would stop and share a cigarette and just talk about weird music or whatever. But when I went to get my Prince Albert from him, he was like, I was like nervous, and he was like, "Oh, don't worry, this is so easy. My wife," they were married. "My wife does this to me four times every night." And I was like,
"Oh my God, King."
Yeah.
That is so funny. Yeah, I have not put a needle through, because obviously, the equivalent of that would be a clitoris piercing. I have not put a needle through my clit or through the hood because I'm just I don't know if I'm ready for that. I might eventually.
You can also, there is a sort of a Princess Albertina for vulvar anatomy where you you go through the urethra, like as like a Prince Albert does.
That's crazy to me, you know.
Yeah, you have that to, I guess you like have to like sound up a little bit in order to get the urethra like stretched enough to do that. But people have done it. It's not a particularly popular one, but
yeah, you know what's crazy? Like sounding is off limits for me. I would never do that to myself. Isn't that fascinating? Yeah, I'm like, I can't sound. Nope, never doing that. That it doesn't give me the ick because I'll do it to someone else. But like on me, I'm just like, no, don't do it. It's funny, like my other than like scat, which is also like an extreme kink, many of my like hard limits are like pretty mild. Like I don't like any type of choking if I don't know the person well.
Okay.
Which like, and like choking's considered like entry level, even though it is pretty dangerous.
I was gonna say, I feel like that makes sense because a lot of people are like, oh, this is so easy. You just choke a person. And it's like, no, you do actually have to like know. Like
yeah. Yeah. No, it's really considered like, oh, entry level, whatever, like fuzzy handcuffs, but it actually is really dangerous. Yeah, and I just, like, I also can't get my face hit at all, not even because, like, I can't have bruises, but because, you know, we can get into my disability, I don't mind talking about it, but in general, I'm not allowed to get my head hit because anything with my face, it can fuck up my brain really badly.
I know you mentioned having a fucked up brain. What's up with your brain?
My brain is really fucked up. So, like, mentally, obviously, like, I have... Whatever, I have a thought disorder, I have schizoaffective, and I also have PTSD, but that's, like, the non-physiological parts of my brain, I guess. But, so I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, hypermobile subtype. Many people have it. It's, like, the more common form of this disorder that's considered rare. And even though it's considered the mildest form, my doctors have said to me, and I quote, you have the most severe case of hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome I have ever seen in my career, end quote. Not to brag. And okay. Not to brag. I just like, so, you know, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, I think people hear the name of it and they hear of it a lot, but they don't know exactly what it is. So it's a genetic disorder, meaning you're born with it. Not that it's not necessarily familial. But it is genetic. You're born with it. It's in your genes. It is a disorder where your DNA does not code your RNA correctly. And because of that, your RNA, something gets fucked up and it can't code for the protein collagen. And collagen is the most plentiful protein in your body. So because of that, people who have any form of Ehlers-Danlos, whether it's hypermobile, vascular, kyphotic, scoliotic, whatever, there's like 10 different subtypes or something. Actually, well, maybe like 7 or 8. And then there's like a couple of other related disorders, like Marfan syndrome is related to EDS. And people who have these disorders, if you don't code correctly for collagen, your body kind of essentially disintegrates in a lot of ways. So because I am not coding this protein correctly, a lot of things get fucked up. And, you know, it is... in literally every part of your body, other than your bone structure that it's in your bone marrow, but it's not in like your bones themselves. Other than your bones, it's in every part of your body. So for me, that has affected my spinal cord. It has affected my discs in my spine. It's affected my brain. My brain did not come. So when you're in utero, your brain has two hemispheres, right? And those hemispheres come together. They're kind of like disconnected at first. So they come together as you get ready to be born. And mine did not come together correctly. So in the base of my brain, near my pituitary gland, I have a fluid-filled sac, a cyst. It's considered a brain tumor, but it's not, you know, it's not cancerous. It's just there. It's pressing on my pituitary gland. It also presses on my ocular nerve. So I have no peripheral vision beyond like a certain part of my field. I am not legally allowed to drive because of it. That's how bad it is. And it makes it so I produce something that I won't get into too much, but it creates too much of a chemical signifier that then the signal goes to my adrenal glands and, or, you know, just above your kidneys, and it causes the creation of like way too much cortisol. So I'm developing something known as Cushing's syndrome. My spinal cord has multiple cysts in it because it did not form correctly. You have a little tiny hole in your spinal cord, and for most people, there's nothing in it. It's just kind of like this space. And because mine is a little too big, it filled with fluid and became a cyst. So there's that. I'm not allowed to get my face hit because it can fuck up this thing in my brain. My brain is falling out the back of my skull with this thing called Chiari malformation type 1, because your cerebrum is supposed to stay like right above your spinal cord, right? Mine is falling out because there's not enough collagen to keep it in place. So there's that. Yeah.
Okay. Hell yeah.
Yeah, there's your medical, there's your
the medical history.
Yeah, and yeah, and so that is, you know, I didn't know that I had EDS until I was 23 years old. I did not get diagnosed until 23, which is like fucking crazy considering like I didn't walk till I was 2 years old. Oh. Which is late, yes, very late. I went into a coma when I was 6 months old. I was in the NICU for a week.
Oh.
Yep. I had all of these problems. I kept spraining my ankles. I kept breaking things. And I you know, nobody knew to look for EDS. I had to figure it out on my own and then go to a doctor and be like, I have this. I think I have EDS. And then the doctor was like, eventually I saw a geneticist. And then the geneticist was like, yeah, you have EDS. So that took 23 years. So I tell people, doctors can be wrong a lot, and if you think something is wrong with you, get it checked out.
It's extremely, yeah. God, I guess we didn't, I don't think we knew each other during when I was going through my year and a half of stuff. That is kind of still ongoing, but that's besides the point.
but yeah, no, I, yeah, no, I get you. I remember you talking because we're on the same pain med, even though, yeah. So I, yeah, it's rough. And I, you know, when I watched Sick, to circle back, I was like, holy shit, you know, there's a way to cope with this. And I have found out through various forms of biohacking, because as trans people, God knows we do a lot of that. I was like, wow, if I get more pain inflicted upon me, that can create the endorphins that my body normally does not create. You know, after a scene, I feel really good for like 2-3 days, you know, as a bottom. And then as a top, you know, I also get a similar endorphin rush because the way I top is like, I'm going to town. Like, I am, like, I beat the shit out of people. With their consent, of course. Like, with their enthusiastic consent. And it's also just nice because a lot of the people I play with are, you know, trans people, people who are disabled. And to be able to create a space where they can engage in that pain and in that biohacking, in that, you know, figuring out different ways to create sensations in the body that are pleasant and make people feel really good, or like make someone's like dream come true. If they wanted like this really extreme like blood scene that nobody else will do, like I'm usually the guy who will do it. And that's always nice. It's always nice to bring that to life for people. And you know, I used to be, back in my previous life, I was originally a medievalist. I was studying medieval history, specifically like Catholic medieval history. For one reason or another, that just didn't work out for me. And now I am a science, I'm a STEM student. So weird. But I'm still really into like, yeah, I'm like, wow, I'm really studying epidemiology. That's fucking crazy. But I still am very into like medieval history. And, you know, it is really interesting to like, think about wound fucking in like this anthropological sense, right? You know, how do we break down and express the limits and the expansiveness of the human body? And that's something that, you know, Catholics, for instance, have explored for a very long time. And as much as I am a Jew, I'm like the most Catholic Jew there is. I mean, I won't say that. There are a lot of Jews that are extremely Catholic. I can name a few off the top of my head.
I know so many. I know so many.
It's because the ritual. There's so much ritual and like pomp and circumstance in Judaism and Catholicism, which like makes sense. Like Catholics stole a lot of stuff from the Jews, but I've always been fascinated in martyrs and saints, especially the extreme martyrs like Saint Catherine of Siena, who believed she had a wedding ring made out of the foreskin of Jesus, and she was married to like baby Jesus specifically. And she would lick and like stick her tongue into like the wounds and like pustules of the sick. Is that wound fucking? Like, was that what she was doing? You know, it is fascinating to me. And she was also just this woman who believed, and this is quoting from an essay by Caroline Walker Bynum, called Women's Stories, Women's Symbols, in the book Fragmentation and Redemption, where she said, in a vision she received, her face, Catherine's face, fused into or became a male bearded face. And she believed that God told her she needed to adopt a male disguise, who has created, because she was a child of God, and she would be able to preach as a woman to shame immoral men. So her Christ, yeah, her Christ was androgynous. Her Christ was androgynous. He was both the bridegroom, but also the mother. And there's also another book by Caroline Walker Bynum called Jesus as Mother. And that's also a very good text. But yeah, St. Catherine was like a pretty radical person of her time. And along with her, you know, prostration but before God, she also was like this servant who believed that by doing the things like taking care of the sick and like licking their pustule and drinking their blood and doing all of that like crazy stuff that was considered really, even at that time, kind of extreme and disgusting, she is an entirely static picture of extreme self-mortification and Eucharistic frenzy. Because that, you know, the Eucharist, as we know, you know, is the blood and body of Christ, which has always fascinated me, because I'm like, that's like cannibalism, right? And they're like, no, it's not cannibalism, it's the Eucharist, and you're not actually eating him. And I'm like, yeah, but that's like kind of freaky for being real. And then, you know, you think about how even when Jesus was still alive and he was, I mean, I guess he had been reincarnated at this point. We have the incredulity of St. Peter, where it's a painting as well, where St. Peter is like literally about to stick his finger into Christ's side wound after Christ had been resurrected post-Easter Sunday, you know, post the coming out of the tomb for however many days he was in there and all that. And that's an idea of wound fucking. And I think that, yeah, it has been around as an idea for a very long time. Is it the St. Thomas or St. Peter? I think it's St. Thomas. Yeah, it's St. Thomas, my bad. Don't quote me on that. There's too many saints. But yeah, he's sticking his finger into Christ's side wound. And, you know, there's all these jokes on Twitter, of course, where people are like, are you going to fuck Christ's side wound? Is Christ's side wound a pussy? But that's like something that has actually been argued for like a really long time, like in art history, specifically, you know, the art history of Catholic representations of Jesus and all of that. People have been fighting about whether his side wound is a pussy and whether it is, you know, is that considered a vagina?
There's absolutely like art that that portrays it as like yonic, like that is a real thing. Like,
Jesus as mother, Jesus as like a Ionic figure, you know, Fragmentation and Redemption is this like collection of essays by Carolyn Walker Bynum that argues that like through the fragmentation of Christ's body, he becomes androgynous. You know, it is this idea of him as this figure that could be either male or female. Same thing with God, you know, even though God is typically referred to with he pronouns with in many religions, you know, does God have a gender? Did God become gendered when he sent his son instead of his daughter? You know, if the living God is male, does that mean God is male? You know, in Jews, even though we, you know, some Jewish scripture will default to he as well, technically in Judaism, God has no gender, and we're not supposed to, even though it is translated typically with pronouns, and modern Hebrew will use the pronouns in the original writings in Aramaic, most of the time God is not referred to as having a gender in Judaism. And I, you know, that's what I grew up with. So to like learn that like God was like a dude, or like supposedly a dude, for me, it was like a little bit of a culture shock. I was like, are you sure? You know, isn't he supposed to just be this being that's like kind of beyond that? You know, but people will have trouble with things that they can't, you know, completely classify and understand. And you know, that's why, again, like trans people too are like considered like this deviant sort of thing, because we can't really be classed. Even if you're like a quote-unquote binary trans person, you're still not in the binary, you know. You still left that, you know, idea of like you can only be one or another. And in terms of like with, so a lot of times when I do blood play with people, if there's like a lot of blood and it can be collected, I will collect it in a cup. Like last night, actually, I had a scene with someone and I did blood cupping on her ass. And we like got so much blood over like such a long period of time, it became these like little discs of coagulated blood that were able to be caught. And then some of it was consumed. And, It's funny because, you know, all, you know, the wound and the blood and all of that, that also traces back to a lot of this, like, this Catholic idea of blood, if we're, like, talking about, like, medieval mystics. Another quote in Fragmentation and Redemption, but in the essay, The Female Body and Religious Practice, Carolyn Walker Bynum says, quote, "Women regularly speak of tasting God, of kissing him deeply, of going into his heart or entrails, of being covered by his blood. Their descriptions of themselves or of other women often, from a modern point of view, hopelessly blur the line between spiritual or psychological on the one hand and bodily or even sexual on the other." And that has always stuck with me. That has been like that is like burned into my brain. I actually put it in like a zine that I wrote about BDSM. So that has stuck with me.
Hell yeah. Were you raised particularly religious?
Not strict, I would say. It's funny because I am a patrilineal Jew, meaning my dad was Jewish, my mom's not. My mom was Lutheran, and then she converted to Catholicism when I was 13, which was when I was mitzvahed. So it's like, I had like quite a few religions going on in the house. But nobody, my mom had like a time where she would like go to mass every Sunday, and that lasted like a year, and then she like stopped doing it. But I did go to Hebrew school, and you know, I enjoyed it, but I was never like, kosher was not strictly enforced, even though I like personally just don't eat pork. You know, there was no like, I didn't have to dress a certain way. I wasn't expected to like never say oh my god. I know some people who like couldn't say that growing up, but I was lucky. I grew up in like a fairly progressive, somewhat like semi-agnostic household where I was also given the choice to be, if I wanted to be Christian I could, and if I wanted to be Jewish I could, so I was able to make that choice.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And so was queerness also a thing that felt like a choice for you growing up, or was that something you had to discover on your own?
Oh, absolutely not. Even though it wasn't religious, I think that there was a level of. So my dad was like a homophobic fuck and transphobic and just like a really, I mean, he's a terrible person in general, but like he was very transphobic and homophobic. And my mom, when she was like in college, she, would do organizing with like abortion right groups and women's rights, LGBT. She did a lot of stuff with the NAACP. She was doing like civil rights marches and a lot of that stuff. And then when she married my dad, she kind of became a conservative because he was a conservative. So I think she was brainwashed a little bit. It took me, God, three, four times to come out before it actually stuck. But now she's great. Now she's like a P flag, total P flag mom. My brother's younger than me. He's also gay. He's a gay cis man. And she uses the correct name and pronouns for me, even though it was tough growing up. I'm very lucky. We have a very good relationship now. She's become a lot better, but it was something that I knew I was different, as we all, the story always goes. Like, I knew there was something about me that was unusual, but I wasn't really sure. But then, I was lucky. Lucky, quote unquote, that I grew up in the age of Tumblr. Because, as we know, that can backfire a little bit, and it definitely did. Like, I used to be a bit of a. I mean, I used to be an asshole. I think we all, have had our asshole moments, but I definitely was like. Kind of a. I was actually. So this is gonna come become a really sound really crazy. For a little bit, from ages like 18 to 20, I was actually like a really big sexual purist. Like, I believed that like incest role play and rape role play was evil, even though I was like secretly into it.
You were
But I
also
was,
doing sex work at that time, right?
yeah. So I was like in this weird, like reactionary. I think, it was partial because like I can't relate to the girlies. Or the boys, the baby boys who have like a lot of who had a lot of queer clients and like their clients were really nice and gave them a lot of money. Like I was doing $25 blowjobs, you know what I mean? Like, to random guys, whoever would work. And then even when I was working the bars I was turning tricks in an area. I won't get too specific just because I don't want to be, anyway, turning tricks in a particular area, and even that, even though I was in little, it was a little bit more of a high-end area. I still wasn't making the kind of money that some people made, and I didn't feel like sex work was liberating. It was a job, and like many other jobs, it sucked in many ways, but it was also good in many ways. I don't want anybody to think I'm a SWERF. Obviously, I'm pro sex work, and I'm pro sex workers being safe. It's just for me, I didn't have an experience where I felt like it was something I particularly really enjoyed. I didn't have a lot of choice in who I slept with in terms of like I couldn't have like discretion. I had to sleep with whoever wanted to sleep with me for that money, and so that kind of sucked. But I also worked Trader Joe's for 3 years, and that fucking sucked too. That probably sucked worse than doing the $25 blowjobs. Because, like, it would take me. So I was making. It would take me like 2.5 hours to make $25 at Trader Joe's. But it took me like 30 minutes to make $25 with that blowjob. So, whatever.
That's just math, like.
That's just simple math. So, yeah, I think there was a part of me that was like dealing with like. Reactionary shit that I saw on Tumblr, and I had also been I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse at the hands of my father and a survivor of rape later in my teen years. And I was like, well, if you do that, you're just evil and it's disrespectful to survivors. And now I don't feel that way, obviously. Anybody who listens to this who has slept with me knows that. anybody who has access to my private Twitter or even my like public Twitter knows that I'm a fucking I'm like, yay, incest. God, I hope that isn't taken out of context. yay, incest play, okay? Not real incest. Anyway. And yeah, I had my moment where I was like that. Same thing where like I had that, I had my moments where I was like, oh, we need to, you know, cancel culture isn't real, but, you know, still working on, like, ruining people's lives, like, still believing that, like, some people deserve to have their lives ruined for some other reason or another. I don't agree with that anymore either. I think that that is, you know, we talk about restorative justice, and that's not restorative justice. That's just being evil. You know, but I was an asshole. And I try not to be an asshole anymore. I try to, you know, change my ways, not engage in trying to restrict someone's sexuality or trying to restrict somebody's presentation in terms of like what they like and who they are. You know, I'm you know, not trying to be like that anymore. And yeah, for me, you know, in engaging in like CN, you know, consensual non-consent, you know, we every fucking week on Twitter, I feel like we rehash the, is this evil? Is this like actual rape? And it's like, Jesus Christ. Like, for me, it's been a positive thing. I actually told my therapist, who I've seen for like 7 years, about CNC. And she's like, that's great. She's like, does that help you process? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, awesome. So... she's great for that. I don't know what I was expecting from her when I told her, but you know, she's pretty positive about it.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. Good therapist. Yeah, okay. Were you, I know you mentioned like dungeon training, were you, and also right, so were you engaging with during that era of your life when you were like sex negative or what have you? I guess this is not quite sex negative. I don't really know what the anti this sort of stuff, I guess. I don't know. Were you also having to engage with it through sex work or?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that makes, I don't know. That makes a lot of sense, I think. It's very easy to hate anything when you aren't really given a choice about how you're engaging with it.
Yeah, and I think that happens to a lot of people, honestly. I think it's a pretty easy thing to slip into.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I would agree. Okay. Fascinating. where else were we? I don't know. I feel like we haven't done a lot of the life narration, but that's okay, because I don't know. I don't know. Like, when in this story do you come out as trans?
Oh, Jesus. I first was like, I'm non-binary when I was like 15 or 16 on Tumblr. I was not out in real life. You know, I told my mom I was trans, or like I was non-binary when I was like maybe 17 or so. And, you know, it was not something she was okay with. And I struggled with, like, whether or not I wanted to start HRT and, like, go on testosterone. I was, like, I was flip-flopping on it a lot. And I was dating my ex-boyfriend at the time, who was a trans man. And he gave me the great advice that I now give people when they ask if they should start HRT, is give it 3 months. And so I went to the clinic, one of the only places you could really like get HRT at the city at that time. So I live in New York City. I don't know if we touched on that. But yeah, I went to one of the only places you could like actually get in for an appointment. They gave me the informed consent sign. They made me go to like this one meeting. And I read the informed consent, went over it with my doctor there and signed it and started HRT. And that was in July of 2017. Yeah, because I was 20. I just turned 20. And I have been on it ever since. It'll be 7 years this July. So I like it. I came out to my mom through text. I basically told her, like, this is what I'm doing. This is how I identify. This is, like, these are the pronouns I use. This is the name I'm using. You can take it or leave it. But I was honest with her, and I, you know, told my family, you know, I will visit sometimes, but I'm not going to be, like, close with you guys if you're not going to accept me. I was, like, really upfront about it. And, you know, came out socially. And my mom, again, God bless her, she's been fantastic and, you know, immediately started reading about trans stuff. And, like, now she's, like, doing this thing where you write, like, letters of love and encouragement to trans kids who, like, don't have parents to do that. Like, so,
aww.
Yeah, so she, like, asked me, she's, like, I really want to do that and, like, be available if, like, any, if, like, there's, like, a call thing that I can do. She has, like, she did a presentation at work about trans people and, like, how we can, like, better respect them and, like, what it means to be trans in American society. And she, like, asked me a ton of questions. And she's always like, is it okay that I, like, use you? Like, I say that, like, my kid is trans. I'm like, yeah, that's totally fine. Like, I am not quiet about it. You don't have to be. Like, I'm not stealth by any means. And, yeah, no, she's great. And my brother's very accepting. I mean, he's a cis gay Zoomer. And a lot of the Zoomers seem to be, I mean, obviously there's, like, some reactionary shit going on with younger men right now. Luckily, my brother is not one of those men. He's a very good kid. He's very smart, very sweet. He's like, yay, now I have a brother, you know, when I came out, you know, joking around. Yeah, no, it's really great. My partner is also, I mean, my partner was non-binary and, like, had their parents paid for their name change when they turned 18. Their parents are very sweet. I've been with my partner for going on 9 years.
That's the same partner that told you, you know, give it 3 months.
No, that was my ex-boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And no, this partner is just, yeah, we've been polyamorous since we've been together. Like, we've always been open or poly, which is shocking to some people because they usually hear about people opening their relationship, but ours was, like, pretty much always open from the start, which I guess is kind of, like, crazy to people because we've been together since I was 17.
Okay. Right? Yeah. Wow, yeah.
17. Oh, I'll be 27 this year, so I guess we've been together 10 years? I don't know, dude. we don't like pay attention to our anniversary or anything.
Long time.
Yeah. They started testosterone 3 or 4 years ago, I think. A lot later than I did. But they are on T now. I told them, give it 3 months, and they were like, okay. And now it's been 3 years, so.
Okay. Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I guess, yeah, you know, I think when you accept yourself in terms of gender and sexuality, just in terms of orientation, I think once you feel, like, safer in your body, it's a lot easier to explore S&M. I know a lot of people who didn't really get into it until they were comfortably out, you know, because engaging in it in a heterosexual way was not something they liked. And they thought that because of that, they weren't kinky. I hate that word. Sorry, but it's like, I fucking hate that word. Like, I hate kinkster too. I'm just, like, gross. Anyway, but I use them because, like, people, you know, they know what it means. You know, people didn't really want to engage in BDSM in a straight way, which I totally understand. I also did not like engaging in it in a quote unquote straight way. Once I was like, oh, I can do this, like, in a really faggy or dykey way, that's when it was, like, much more appealing to me.
Fair.
Yes. And I think that, like, ties into, like, wound fucking in a way that is, like, yeah, like, I am not, like, I have a strap. But, you know, in terms of gear, you know, using a needle is just such a, like, fascinating way to, like, fuck somebody. using a needle or like using a finger in somebody's like open wound. I really love the wound fucking with the needle because it like it hurts, but it like is like this like weird like dull hurt. It's very interesting when you're
Yeah.
putting, yeah,
Like
it's
the
such.
drag of the metal against the. I've never done this as like this, but like I've been pierced a lot, and so like I've, yeah.
You get it.
I've paid attention to the sensations. I like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that's what's so cool about it. And like I typically use piercing needles when I'm doing play piercing. Some people use like hypodermics. Hypodermic needles and piercing needles are different in a couple of ways. You know, one obviously is like one is for piercing and one is for like drawing blood or injecting medication. But typically with the piercing needles, the way the bevel is constructed is different than a hypodermic because it is intentionally there to cause a hole. With a hypodermic, you're trying to minimize the damage done, right? That's also like medicine is like no harm done or whatever. So they typically make hypodermics in a way that you're not trying to create a hole or create like a tunnel. With a piercing needle, obviously you are. Like you want to create a hole in the body that will then be kept open by another piece of metal or like whatever you're using, silicone, you know, whatever piercing you're getting. And so when you're putting a piercing needle in, it is kind of it's harder to push. I kind of compare trying to like pushing a piercing needle in is like you have like 2 second, you have these two different like pops of resistance. One is going through the skin, the second is going through the fat, and then after that it's smooth sailing until you're, you know, putting it out on the other end. And I like to compare it to an anus because you have to get through those like pops of the sphincters, right? And there's two
Right.
sphincters, yeah.
Yeah,
I
that makes a lot
mean,
of sense.
right? I love saying that to people because it's like kind of funny. But it's real. Like it feels like going through those first sphincters and you know, there's actually tons of sphincters in the human body.
Yeah, there are.
There's so many. But yeah, those two in the butt, those are like the main ones that are like in your ass.
That's the ones everyone talks about.
Those are the popular ones.
Yeah.
The popular sphincters. You can actually get the second one cut or put Botox in it so your butthole relaxes so you can do anal better. I've considered it because my butt's too tight for anal. Anyway. That's besides
Okay.
the point. But yeah, and so I did like especially so if you're push so once you get like the needle in and you have like one end in and then it goes out and then pops out the other side, which is like typically how you do it, you can like even fuck it there where it's just like not completely leaving. You can twist the needle like in place and that like creates a really interesting sensation because you can like feel it in your fat. You can kind of like turn the needle so it like kind of rends the flesh a bit. And doing all of those different things with the needle also can lead to like more blood when you take the needle out, and that's like desired by a lot of people. A lot of people want to see the blood. And so that's like ways to like get that blood rushing. Also, like if you are putting needle, if you're piercing someone on the ass, for instance, which I did last night, good way to get a lot of blood is to beat their ass first, because that, you know, inflames the tissue. And anytime there's inflammation, blood's gonna flow to it. So it's trying to like fix the damage because your body is an amazing thing and is always trying to make sure that you're okay and not gonna die. But we can really play with and like hack those natural reactions to get things that we want. Same thing goes for like blood cupping if you're on your ass, if you like beat someone's ass a lot and then you do like the scalpel cuts and then you cup it, which is like if people don't know what cupping is, it's like the thing that it's like a used as a therapy typically where cups are put on the different parts of the body and there's like tension that's created either by putting flame in the cup or by like a suction. And then if you do that, obviously, if you're doing suction on somebody where there's cuts, there's going to be a lot of blood that comes with it. That's a really popular way to draw a lot of blood. So you do a bunch of like small incisions that aren't that deep. But last night, like when I was playing with this girl, You know, I because her ass was already like so beat up, and there had been needles and stuff. Like the blood like flowed immediately. Yeah, so that was fun. And you can like wound fuck with a scalpel. It's definitely like you have to pay attention to what type of blade you use. But it is possible. But I'm always very careful about that, because you can really fuck somebody up like in a bad way with that. So like you gotta be careful.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah. I mean everything, a lot of it, you know,
Yeah, I
most of
mean
it's
everything we've talked, I
dangerous.
mean like we were saying, like choking is like
Yeah.
so many people are doing choking, and that's an actually like an extremely dangerous like practice. And that's not like oh, you shouldn't be choking, but it's like you should, you know what the fuck you're doing. Like
Yeah.
read. It is not hard to do right, but it is extremely easy to do wrong and like really hurt someone
Yeah, exactly.
is
Yeah,
maybe
that.
the better way to put that.
Yeah. And it's why I also stay away from, you know, to get into like the philosophy of S&M, you know, people talk about safe, sane, and consensual. I don't like that term, because safe, like, no, it's not. Like, kink is inherent. Most kink and like BDSM and S&M is like inherently unsafe. Sane, you know, that goes into like sanism, and like I'm not, you know, legally I'm considered insane, whatever, because I have a schizo disorder. Consensual, obviously, that's the important part, right? So then we move on to RAC, you know, risk aware consensual kink. I like that a lot better, because there's always risk involved. There's always danger. You don't have to be quote unquote sane to engage in kink. Like you need to be, like I personally will not engage in scenes with people who are under the influence. Which is a pretty common thing in the scene, is like you don't fuck with somebody that way when they're under the influence of a drug, because like, you know, any type of sex in general, you know, the consent can be a hard thing, and then people who are drunk or high might not feel as much pain. So even though pain is the desired effect, pain also tells you when something's wrong. So if you can't feel pain at all, you can't feel the pain that is telling you something's wrong. And you can't, you know, tap out and red light. It's much easier to go too far. So anyway, you know, I don't believe someone has to be quote unquote sane to have kinky sex, but risk aware is the best way, I think, to put it, you know?
Right, to talk about it.
Yeah, because otherwise it's just it kind of veers off into, you know, what is safe, what is sane. And I don't
Right.
think anybody can truly define that.
Yeah, it's a very like it's a slippery. Yeah, I mean, and it's also, as you said, like thanism is not, yeah.
It's a nebulous thing to define.
Oh God, what did you say in there? There was something in there I wanted to take as a jumping off point, but I can't remember what it was now.
I know, I'm really just
Maybe
talking.
it'll come back to me. Well, let me give you my media recommendations.
Oh, hell yeah.
Extremely strange. Flexing with Monty.
I've not heard of that.
Okay, it's like one of the sh it's just like I don't even know. It's kind of like it kind of like I'm gonna steal I'm borrowing from I found this because it was discussed on the podcast Live at the Death Factory, rest in peace. But one of the hosts of that s said that this reminded her It reminded her of Sarah Kane, and it honestly is kind of like if Sarah Kane were like a leather dude, with like a really fucked up sense of humor. Yeah, that's how I would describe Flexing with Monty. It doesn't like have really any wound fucking in it, but it's extremely. There's lots of talk of martyrs among weird quote unquote gay, I guess, question mark gay
Yeah,
sex.
really?
It's really good. And then my favorite, probably, well, I don't know if it's my favorite thing on the list, but it's one I've talked about in the podcast before. Mad K. Do you know Mad K?
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's a manga. It's like a
Oh, I think you did recommend it to me because I was like, I'm not really a manga. I'm not really a manga person, but like, I will read something that's like fucked up.
Yeah, it's extremely fucked up, and it's like it gets. Yeah. Oh my fucking god! Like, I don't want to spoil like the very last book, but like, god, the last sex scene is truly like it's a real like, what the fuck is going on in your mind there? Like, what the fuck? Like, how?
There's a graphic novel that's like really fucked up called Sad Sack. I don't know if you've heard of it.
It is
Sad Sack. Comic book. It is. Oh wait, not Sad Sack. What the fuck is it called?
I was gonna say this is a.
No, this is not right.
An army comic book about.
You know what? I'll figure it out eventually. I'll find it eventually. Maybe it's like gore. It's about like revenge and all that good stuff. I'll find it eventually. But yeah, no, it's not Sad Sack.
Okay.
God, of course I can't find it. Anyway, my cat is going fucking crazy right now. She's so mad that I have her locked out of the room.
Oh, poor kitty.
No, if she comes, it's over. She's going to be screaming. Anyway. I mean, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh my god, I'm trying to think. I don't know. Do we have any final questions? Is there anything you haven't got to talk about yet that you wanted to talk about? I don't know.
No, I mean, I know, Spina. It's so sad. Oh my god, did you hear that?
Yes.
Spina, you're on the podcast.
That's why I'm insane. Oh my god.
Hi, honey. I know, you're famous. yeah, no, I think I got to everything. It's, like, not the longest.
That's thing, okay.
Yeah, because it's, like, not... It's so, like, hyper-specific.
Yeah, but that's good. I enjoy, like I said, this is the year of Gonzo. We're doing a lot of we're doing Gonzo journalism.
Yeah, like I am, like I said on Twitter, I am a girl when I am getting wound fucked and a boy when I am doing the wound fucking. My gender is whatever makes me sexiest to you.
Hell yes. I do think yes. Hell yeah. I love that. I love that for you. And yeah, this is... Yeah.
Yeah, if I can recommend something for reading, if people want,
yeah,
I can link it to you as well. But it is an article on smarthistory.org called Mysticism in Queer Readings of Christ's Side Wound in the Prayer Book of Bonne of Luxembourg, which is by Dr. Maeve K. Doyle. And basically it talks about one of the most, it's considered one of the most like important prayer books in like medieval history that has to do with a lot of Christ's side wound. There is quite a bit of side wound action in this book, including like Yannick representations. And there's also like one picture where he's like fucking his own side wound in the book, like with his finger. It's really good.
Hell yeah.
Okay, Spina, I know, I'll link it to you so you have it, but yeah, it's very good. You know, it does mystical and like queer reading of it. It's a good article, and that prayer book you can find online, like the entire PDF, and it's gorgeous.
Okay, hell yeah. That rules. Yeah.
Okay, Spina, I know, baby girl. Yeah, she's mad at me. She was like, how dare you lock me out?
Kitty. Yeah, you can't You can't lock out the kitties.
No, she's very important.
Right. So important.
So important.
Well, thank you, as always, for joining us, the audience and Vanya, most importantly. Thank you to Lynn July for our theme music. You can support us on Patreon. I need to be better about saying that. That's somewhere in the episode. We have some fun. I was supposed to like record it this weekend, but then something happened, so we're gonna record it next weekend, I think. There's gonna be some real Testo junkie shit on the Patreon this year. It's gonna be I've got plans. We've got some episodes coming up that it's gonna be really good.
Oh yeah.
I guess by the time this comes out, actually, I might have already put out that episode on the Patreon. So maybe you'll have seen the preview for what that was referencing, or maybe you won't. But time is weird. I always forget about that.
Oh, yeah. Same.
Thank you once more to Vanya.
Thank you for having me.